trying to predict what goes on inside a woman's mind is about like trying to predict spring weather in the mid-Atlantic. Last week we had a day in the low 80s. The next day it snowed in the morning, 2 inches. By that afternoon it was nearly 60 degrees and the snow was all melted. Today I want to be your guide to the best of my ability after 22 years of marriage, 10 meaningful relationships, another 20 not so meaningful. Give you the benefit of my opinion and experience on what goes on inside a woman's mind. This is Life 2.0. Let's talk about it. I've talked about this in other videos, but I think it's worth repeating. You've got to understand that the female creature in nature is always one that is on the defensive. It's always fearful. When I walk the paths, I come across female deer with their young all the time. They huddle together in small herds, you know, with say 6 to 10 deer all together, adults and children. The male deer are always alone, almost always. I think I've caught a couple young males together on one occasion, but for the most part, they are alone. Now, when I approach the female deer with their young, my three dogs, especially when they're off leash, they run, they scatter. And Dibu loves to chase them. But the males, oh no, no, no. They do not run. Oh, I remember, thankfully it was before I got Dibu. I don't know what I would do with him now. But those male deer, when they had their full rack, you know, it's all completely grown in for the season, they just lower their head. They don't move an inch. They look at you right in the eye and they lower their head. They are not giving ground. This is their land. This is their space. There's their territory. They are not gonna let a human and a bunch of domesticated canines push him around. Well, human females are just like the deer. They have been programmed genetically, historically, through their behaviors, through, you know, selective breeding, survival, all that stuff, to have a much heightened awareness of threats. They're always on the lookout for threats, and they're always looking for opportunities. And it's really critical to understand that. Because once you can take that logic and you can apply it to women, so much of their behavior becomes so much easier to understand. Also, it's critical to understand that when someone is in a state of fear, fight or flight, that the blood flows away from their brain. It runs to their arms and their legs. Honestly, I'm not just making this shit up, I'm serious. Yeah, so the one organ that is most critical to human beings trying to figure themselves out becomes nullified when we're in fear and we're in that fight or flight mode. And women move into that fight or flight mode a lot. That's why they're all on anti-anxiety drugs. So that's sort of the basis for where we're gonna go today. Let's talk about attraction next. Historically, women sought men out for safety and security. This has gone back 100,000, maybe a million years, who knows, beginning of time. This is what relationships were for back in the day. This is still a major driving factor in most relationships, whether it is something that they are aware of or not. This is something that they have running in the background. This is software that's part of the operating system. It's not something that can be uninstalled. It's not something they can overwrite. It's something that's always running. Now, they may be able to avoid it or ignore it, but it's still there. So when a woman meets a man, that software is running a program trying to figure out the likelihood that this is going to be a safe landing place. There is going to be a mathematical formula they're going to do. There is one number. We're going to call it attractiveness. And it's not just physical attractiveness. There's a lot that goes into that. It can be your personality. It can be so much about you as a person that they find attractive or not. And it's going to be a score that goes with that. And then there's going to be a score for safety, meaning what are your resources? What do you bring into the table? If you have a guy who maybe scores low on the attractive number, but scores really high on the resources number, let's say a 4 and a 10, say the guy's a multi-millionaire, well, that guy's doing pretty well. You know, he's gonna do just fine. Now you could have a Chad, you know, who scores really, really high on the attractive factor, but maybe a 0 on the financial factor, he's not gonna do so well. I know you guys all want to point your finger to better looking guys and say they've got it made. Yeah, a good looking guy who's homeless and a drug addict, he's not attracting a lot of hot babes, man. Not happening. So there is a formula that determines just how effective or attractive you're going to be to a woman. And it does involve your resources. And your resources are not just about money either. That's a big part of it. But it's also, what else are you bringing to the table in terms of what are you willing to give her? You know, it could be attention. It could be understanding. Are you one of those guys that is willing to sit there and listen to her run on at the mouth all the time? Are you emotionally supportive? All that stuff. Those are kind of resources, and women do appreciate that stuff. It kind of overlaps a little bit with attraction, but it is a separate number as well. Here's the thing, no woman's ever going to admit this to you. Women are always going to talk about connection and attraction and soulmates and that kind of language. They're not going to be talking about resources and financial stability and safety. But if you have all of the emotional and a physical attractive qualities that a woman is looking for, and you're scoring a big goose egg on the resources end of the table, you're probably, not guaranteed, but you're probably not going to do that well. Now, there are guys out there, and I have seen them, who are really, really good looking guys, but are nimrods. They're just complete dunces. You know, they are not going anywhere. Their lives were a complete mess. One of my best friends in high school, he was one of the best looking guys. He was just as dumb as a box of rocks. Now, he was high all the time, so that might have been part of the problem. But the irony is this guy won like the scratcher lottery twice. He won $10,000 twice on a scratcher lottery. How does someone do that? Like within a month of each other. I mean, they were investigating him. They were thinking that he was cheating. He was just high all the time. Anyway. I don't know actually what happened to him. He was a great looking guy, but girls kind of stayed away from him because he did come off as with this loser vibe, you know? And he was a nice guy. He was a real good guy. He really was. He was just high all the time, you know? And he kind of came off like a little bit like a character from a Cheech and Chong movie. You know what I mean? So that loser quality is not going to get you very far. Regardless of how good looking you are, and regardless of how kind you are, or how thoughtful you are, or how much you connect with her, if you can't provide her with a safe landing place, you can't provide her with a sense of security in her life, it's very, very unlikely that she's going to waste a lot of time with you. Fear-based thinking also plays a significant role in monkey branching. So when I met my wife, I owned a house and I was a single father and I had a good job working for a big company. It was long before I went to work for my family. And I was a mid-level manager, executive, if you will. And this was like back in 19, 1998, 1999, I was making about $75,000 a year as a mid-level manager for this big company. Full benefits. I mean, it was a sweet job. It was a sweet job. I was out in the field all the time. It was a good job. Enough for me to afford a townhouse that I bought for $125,000 in a very nice area in our town. Now you guys are laughing, $125,000 wouldn't buy you a trailer today. But back then, in the 90s, that was good money. I think I bought that place like in 96 or 97. And yeah, it was a nice little townhouse, a little two-bedroom townhouse, three levels, very cute. So when my wife met me, from her perspective, I seemed very solid and secure. Everything seemed to be pulled together. Had a house, had a good job, had a child, took the pressure off of her in terms of having children. It was just a perfect landing place for her. Coming out of her career as a Broadway dancer, traveling the world, most of her compensation came in the form of lifestyle because they took care of her. You know, they put her up in good hotels and paid for her room and board. They didn't pay her very much cash. I think she made like $600 or $700 a week, you know, so $30,000 to $40,000 a year was her best year. But you know, she'd have a lot of expenses, so it was a good gig. Now fast forward 20 couple years, and I've quit my job. You know, even though now we're living in this big ass house, we've had nannies, we've got all kinds of cars, we've been on tons of vacations, we've had the good life. And I come to a place in my life where I realize that I need to make some changes, that things are not going the way I want. I'm having my midlife crisis. I'm going through it. So I leave that job, and I've explained why that happened in another video, so I won't go into it here. And we have to sell the house, we have to rent a little place until I can get my act together. There's a lot of insecurity in this moment. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking plan A, plan B, plan C. I've got to figure something out. I'm puzzling this. You know, I'm trying to find the path toward the goal of making enough money to afford our lifestyle. And plan A didn't work out. Plan B didn't work out. So now I'm on to plan C, and things are starting to get some traction. And it's at this point where she bails. She decides that she's going to leave. And within a month, she's shacking up with her old boyfriend. Now this guy is an idiot. He's a heroin addict. He's got all kinds of issues. You know, he never got his act together. But I guess he was able to play it like he had, because he had appeared in a bunch of TV shows as an extra, you know, like on those crime shows. You know, I can't remember the name of those shows. I don't watch them. But anyway, so he's an extra in all these crime shows. And so he's playing it like he's doing well for himself. But in reality, he was still a drug addict, and he was still, you know, got all kinds of problems. And but she fell for him. They started shacking up. Next thing you know, he's in the hospital having all kinds of problems. She's having to be the person who makes decisions for him. Thankfully, his family stepped in and saved her from that after a few months. But she was just looking for a safe place to land. And in her fear, remember, all the blood flows away from your brain, she went to the worst possible place, you know? She went to the worst possible guy. She went to a guy that she knew from before and thought she could find some level of safety with him. And when in actuality, he just dragged her further into the fear. So when you look at women's behavior and you start calling them unethical, which it is an unethical behavior, there's no question about it. But from their perspective and from an anthropological perspective, they're just behaving the way they have always behaved. So if you were, back in the hunter-gatherer days, you come home with a big giant gaping wound from where a boar, you know, gouged you in the thighs, and you're bleeding out, well, she's going to start looking around the camp. See if there's another hunter, another guy who will take her on. She's not waiting around to see if you die or not. She's jumping ahead of the game here. She's figuring worst case scenario that you're not going to be able to provide for her anymore, and she's moving on. And I think this happened quite a bit. And I think women today, whether they know it or not, are still driven by those exact same motivations. They are always looking for safety and security. And if you can provide that for them, and you can do it on many levels, it's not just financial, it's not just physical, it's emotional, it's psychological. I mean, you've got to provide them with the whole suite of safety and security. It's not just about having good money. Because you can have good money, and if you're cheating on her, or if you're fooling around with women behind her back or whatever, you know, or you're gambling, or you're an alcoholic, or you're a drug addict, she's not going to feel safe and secure in that environment. Regardless of how much money is there, she's always going to feel threatened, and she's going to take steps to protect herself. So you've got to have that in mind. Women want to be secure and safe on a physical level, financially and emotionally and psychologically, and financially. And they want to feel it all the way across the board. So that's the thing about the fear-based mentality that women have. And once you get your head around that and you start to see their bad behaviors, when they start acting out, and I'm not talking about a psychotic woman or a, you know, a bipolar or someone with narcissism or anything like that. I'm just talking about a normal, relatively healthy woman. When they start acting out in negative ways, they start getting upset, they start screaming, they're becoming critical, they're becoming judgmental, they're starting to emasculate you, more often than not, it's because they feel insecure and unsafe. And what they're wanting to do, what they're trying to do in their own childish way, is they're trying to trigger you into a more masculine mode. I know that's hard to hear. I know it is. But I think that's exactly what it is. They're trying to trigger you into a leadership role. And it's not an easy one to take on because they're emotional and they're crazy. But you've got to be able to calm them down in the same way that you would calm, you know, a child. And you've got to make them understand that you've got everything under control and that they are safe and that they are cared for and that you love them and that everything is going to be fine. And as long as you can, like, bring them down, it's like if you've got a horse, you know, that's really upset, or any, you know, domesticated animal, you know that you've got to bring them back into a state of calmness, of rest and relax, before you can rationalize with them. If they're in that flight or flight mode, man, you cannot talk. There's no rational thought happening in their head. There's no way you can come to any kind of level of peace and quiet or peace and serenity in her mind, and certainly no safety and no sense of security if she's in fight or flight mode. You've got to bring her back to a state of rest and relax. Women do not make relationship issues in isolation. Men do. Men are completely different. So you've got to eliminate the way you think from this scenario, and you've got to understand the way they think. So women are always looking for other women's opinions when it comes to relationship decisions. They're looking for consensus. Consensus is critically important to women in general, but when it comes to relationships, this is even more so. They're always looking for someone who is reaffirming what they think is right, or they're looking to someone to find out what might be right. And so long as women look to other women for consensus, they are going to sabotage their lives. If your girl, your wife, your girlfriend, whatever, has a bitter single friend, your relationship is in jeopardy. And you need to be aware of that. You need to communicate this to your girl, your wife, whatever. Bitter single women who are in a negative state of mind when it comes to relationships and men will sabotage all of the relationships in her social group because she does not want anyone else to be happier than her. I know this sounds petty, it sounds silly. You say, John, you're just being a dick. Nope, I'm telling you, man, this is absolutely provable. This is something psychologically true. I don't know what it is about women, but they really do not like seeing their friends happier than they are. Now, that's not 100% of the time. I think that there are some women who are genuinely great people and they love seeing their friends thrive. At least that's what they'll tell you. But underneath it, oh God, you know, there is a level of jealousy. You know, my sister was a bridesmaid for all of her college roommates. I think she had, you know, three roommates, and there was a couple of friends that hung out with them. And she was a bridesmaid for all of them. So when she got to be in her 30s, oh my God, the pressure was on. You know, she had to find a man. She found one. God bless him. You know, he put up with her all these years. They're still married. It was touch and go for a long time. I was thinking that she just grabbed the first available man. The first man that would marry her, she grabbed him. But he's a decent guy. He's a decent guy. But yeah, she was in a state of panic over it because she did not want to be the one left behind. She wanted to be a part of the group. There had to be consensus there. Well, the opposite is true too. So once a woman gets burned, like say she's divorced, she's been broken up for a long time, she's been living single for a long time, and her girlfriend has a great boyfriend, you know, they're hanging out all the time, they're having a great relationship, that single friend will whisper in her ear and slowly undermine that relationship at every turn. Every questionable event where that woman comes to her single friend and asks for advice, that single friend will probably give decent advice, but it'll come with a little caveat, like, oh, but maybe this isn't the right guy for you. Maybe you should consider looking around. Maybe there's someone better for you. Maybe this is an indication that he's just not for you. Yeah, that kind of talk. Now, she's not intentionally, overtly blowing up the relationship, but she's just making little insinuations that maybe this isn't the right thing for you. When my ex-wife made her brilliant decision to leave, she was getting advice from a friend at work who was also planning to leave her husband. Well, this woman and her, they schemed it all up, and they were going to live together, and they were going to be friends, and they were going to be doing the town. They were going to have just be two wild and crazy single women out there, just living it up. So Tracy, my ex-wife, she pulled the string. She went, she left, and her friend didn't. And here it is over 6 years later, and her friend is still married. Isn't that ironic, you know? Isn't that ironic? Anyway, women seek out the worst possible people sometimes for advice. They seek out other women. And other women are not necessarily very reliable when it comes to guiding women through relationship issues. That's why the whole safety and security thing is not just a physical security or financial security, it's psychological security. She's got to know that she can come to you for consensus. She needs to come to you for agreement. That she's seeking approval and agreement from you on certain issues. And the minute she starts leaving the relationship and seeking advice from these other women is the minute things start going wrong. Women have feelings, and feelings are different from emotions. And these feelings dictate a lot of their behaviors. So let's define them really quickly. An emotion, in contrast, is a behavior as a result of an acute set of circumstances. She becomes angry because the dishwasher isn't emptied. She becomes sad because you didn't take her out to dinner. These are usually transient states of emotion or state of mind, and it comes and it goes, and it can be dealt with in short order relatively easily. Feelings, however, are much more chronic. These are things that go on for extended periods of time. Anxiety is a huge contributor to negative feelings. Fear is a negative contributor to feelings. So they have this feeling in their chest for an extended time, for weeks, months, years. I mean, these things go on for a long time. And this feeling dictates their state of being. I know that's a difficult thing for us to wrap our brains around, but this is how they are. This isn't a temporary experience. This is just almost who they are while this feeling is happening. These feelings can erupt out of emotional or financial insecurity, any kind of fear-based situation. If you're going through, you know, hardships with you lost your job or you're financially in a difficult spot, any one of these things can trigger a fear response, which could be immediately emotional, but then if that fear is not dealt with in a meaningful way, it can evolve into a feeling that becomes this chronic state, and she is in it. She is just in it. If you as a man, I don't think we have feelings like that. I don't, maybe we do, but if they are, we do. It's very, very subtle. I think that, like, before I left my job, I think maybe I had gotten to the point where I didn't feel I enjoyed my job anymore. I had just gotten to the point where I felt I needed to do something different. So maybe it's a little bit like that, but women oftentimes struggle with what to do with these feelings. That's their biggest problem. So when I decided my job wasn't working for me anymore, I left it. I quit. I took action. And this is a difficult thing for women. So if you're going to move away from something, like I moved away from my job, you also have at the same time have to be moving towards something positive, you know, like starting a new business. Women, when they leave you, more often than not, they're just moving away from you. Now, they may be thinking they're trying to move towards something that's more safe, but if they're in that fight or flight mode, like I said, the blood is flowing away from the brain, and this happens on a chronic level too. It's not just, you know, an acute thing. They can be chronically in a state of fight or flight. They oftentimes will make really bad decisions, you know? So what you as a man have to do is you have to become aware of when they have an acute emotional response to something, that you cannot just allow that to slide. You can't just allow that to go away. Like if you don't address that at some level and try to resolve whatever that acute emotional reaction was, there is a good chance that it will become a contributor to a chronic feeling that eventually will sabotage your relationship with her. We've talked a lot about how women seek validation on the internet, you know, and they're always seeing what everybody else is doing and they want to post photos and get thumbs up and smiley faces and hearts and all that bullshit. Well, in a relationship, you have to be the key validator. You've got to be the validator in chief. If you are not validating her, she will seek validation elsewhere, and then you are vulnerable. You must provide her with validation. And you've got to confirm for her that she is doing a good job, that she, you've got to pat her on the head just like you would a little kid. You know, honestly, I know that sounds so demeaning to women, but there is so much truth to it. They want to know that they're doing well. They want to know that you're happy in the relationship. They want to know that they're safe in the relationship. And so when they do something, they make dinner, they clean the house, they get their hair cut, they buy a new dress, whatever it is. They just want to know that it makes you happy, that you're validating. Yes, honey, that's great. You look great in that dress. Yes, oh, thanks so much for dinner. That was wonderful. I so appreciate you. They need that constant feedback. And as much as we appreciate that constant feedback when we are doing something, they almost need it. They thrive on it. And if they're not getting that feedback, oh, it creates that sense of insecurity. It creates that sense of fear. Like maybe I'm not safe in this relationship. Maybe he doesn't love me as much. Maybe he's looking for someone else. Maybe he's already got his eye on somebody. Maybe he's gonna leave me tomorrow. You know, the fight or flight thing starts building quick and quick and quicker until you know, she gets into a state of panic. Now, I'm being, you know, a little hyperbolic here, but that's the way it happens. If you don't reassure them on a regular basis and validate the things that they're doing with positive reinforcement, you will absolutely create an environment where she turns into this, you know, anxious person who is not feeling safe and who's gonna start developing feelings. And these feelings aren't gonna be positive. They're not gonna be healthy, you know, I love you feelings. There's gonna be feelings like, I need to get the hell out of here because this guy doesn't love me anymore. I need to find a safe place. I need to find someone who will take care of me. And yeah, it'll just blow up on you one day. You know, in a video I worked on yesterday, I talked about how men are oftentimes the last to learn that their relationship has gone to shit. You know, that everybody else in the family seems to know about it. You know, the guy at the dry cleaner knows about it. You're the only one who doesn't know. And we got this stunned look on our face for about a month after she leaves, trying to figure out what the hell just happened. It's because we're not paying attention. That's why. It's because we're not paying attention to what's really going on with her. If we go through life thinking that women are just shitty men, we're missing the whole point. That's not who they are. Women are completely different from us, and they need a completely different kind of relationship from us than what we would have with our friends. They cannot be the friends that we have sex with. That's not who they're ever going to be. They're going to be, to some degree, not all the time, I'm hesitating here, I'm hedging, an emotional dependent on you. They're gonna be emotionally dependent, financially dependent. They are going to be dependent on you to some degree. And you know something, this is true regardless of who makes more money. Yeah. Anyway, Debu just interrupted me there. So I guess the point of that whole section is just that understand that validation is a critical factor in your relationship with a woman. And you are always going to have, on some level, an emotional dependent. It doesn't matter how much money she makes, you are still going to be the person that is going to provide the leadership in the relationship. Unless you psychologically give up that role. If you give up that role, then that's on you. Just because she makes more money does not put her in charge, and you cannot allow that to happen. As the masculine person in this relationship, you must be the one who establishes the frame of that relationship, regardless of who makes the most money. And you need to be that person that's providing her with that constant feedback and that validation. That is where you as a man have to step up, because if you don't, she'll seek that validation somewhere else. And that will create an influence on your relationship that is unhealthy. Frequently, when a woman acts out in ways that are irrational or inexcusable or embarrassing to them, they have a defense mechanism called the reality distortion field. This reality distortion field can take any event and change the sequence and the key factors into a new event, something that did not exist, never could exist, and is made up completely out of their imagination. I don't think that they do this consciously. I think that they go back to their room, or they close their eyes, they ruminate on it, maybe they have dreams about it, and then they come out of that rumination or that dream state and they have a whole new version of the story, you know? Just be aware of it. I don't think that they're necessarily trying to gaslight you. I mean, some of them are. Some absolutely are. But I think that if they have done something or said something that is so out of character, when you see them doing things that are out of character, or they're behaving in ways that they are embarrassed by, that they are going to enact the reality distortion field, and they're going to change the key parts of the story so that they support her desired outcome of it. The key thing in dealing with women in the reality distortion field is, don't confront their version of the story. There is no point in it. It's not a matter of who's right or wrong. It's, how do you get to happy? Like, you just got to always be thinking about, how do I get to happy from here? And that doesn't mean you give in to them necessarily, but it also doesn't mean you necessarily have to confront them. Sometimes there is a third path that you can follow, that you can bring the entire issue to a conclusion without working out all of the past negative things that happened in the meantime. You can just look at the bigger picture, find an answer, and go with that. And oftentimes that will solve the problem without you having to admit to having done anything wrong, or her having to, you know, retell the reality distortion field story over and over and over again. Because the more times she retells it, the more true it becomes for her. And there's no point in reaffirming that. Once she starts pulling out the reality distortion field, it's a lost battle. You're not going to win that. You might be able to, I don't know, pull out your camera footage of it or something and hold her to the fire, but you're not going to win that either. Like, that's not going to work out for you in the long run. If you humiliate her and make her feel like she's an idiot and that she's a liar, if you drive her face in it, you know, yeah, she's not going to warm up to you. Yeah, so you've got to find another way. You've got to go around the distortion field. You got to find the solution to the bigger problem without dealing with all the details. So what are the takeaways here? The biggest takeaway, of course, number one, is that you're dealing with a completely different operating system than what you have installed. So you have to approach each problem from a heightened level of awareness. You are not going to be able to use the answers that work for you for her. You've got to see this world from the state of a woman, someone who lives in a almost chronic state of fear. And you need to understand that safety and security are primal. They're primal for her. And if you don't address those issues, she will never be happy in your relationship. And it will always be a challenge dealing with this woman. Number two, watch how she's behaving. Watch what she does, not what she says. This is an old story, but it's critically important with women, because they will tell you what's going on inside them by their behaviors. And you need to be on heightened alert if you're in a state of conflict with her for any period of time, because her behaviors are going to start getting erratic. The way you take control of her behaviors is by, again, addressing the safety and the security. You know, so long as she's feeling loved, safe and secure and appreciated, you can start setting the narrative. This is how leadership happens with women. You've got to create this environment where they feel safe, secure, appreciated, and loved. If you're doing that and you're reaffirming that to them on a regular basis, you will be in charge of this relationship. You will be calling the shots. You will be in control. But if she feels like she's got to go to her friends or someone else to, you know, get some advice and get some validation, then she's gonna be a problem. Third thing, she cannot be the source of your validation. You have to be the source of your own validation. You have got to be completely autonomously capable of reaffirming your understanding and belief. Now, that doesn't mean you don't look for resources. You know, I mean, you've got to read books, you can talk to your friends, you know, you can get information from all kinds of sources. But when it comes down to what actions you're going to take and how you're going to behave when it comes to dealing with your woman, well, you've got to dig deep inside and you've got to find the right answers, not from a selfish perspective, but from a healthy relationship perspective. And that requires not reacting. That requires taking a breath. That requires taking some time to respond to issues, not allowing yourself to get triggered by their fearful behaviors. Because if you allow them to trigger you with their fear, then you're going to react and create more fear. And then the whole thing turns into a shit show. So you've got to become a more responsive man and a less reactive man. Fourth, be really aware of who she's hanging out with. Who are her friends? What are they saying to her? What is she getting from them? Do not allow her to depend on those friends as a sole source of advice. You know, you need to be her source of validation where she comes for agreement. You need to be the person that she is seeking consensus from. If she's trying to get consensus from her bitter single friend who's been divorced 3 times, yeah, you better believe you're in trouble. There's no question about it. And finally, if your woman flips the switch, she says no more sex, she's talking about divorce, she's talking about leaving, she's upset, she's angry, there is a very good chance there is nothing that you can do at this point. I would argue that the vast majority of relationships that get to that place are irreconcilable. You can try if you want, but I would say that at this point, in most cases, you're better off starting to recreate your life anew, whether it's just in your head or in the real world. It's time for you to move on. Trying to convince a woman who has already gone off the reservation and she's already told you that she doesn't respect you because she's not going to have sex with you, she's not going to be intimate with you, she's not going to be loving with you, she's not holding hands, she's not being affectionate just in kind ways, and you're starting to see these negative behaviors and she's got that sour look on her face all the time, and you're walking on eggshells and the relationship has gotten to that place where you don't feel comfortable in your own home, the relationship is over. Stop fooling yourself. It's time to move on. Just psychologically cut the tether and start planning your next move. Do not stay there and suffer. It's not worth it. All right, you guys, I certainly hope you've enjoyed this video. If you have, please like and subscribe. If you know someone who might enjoy something like this, please share it with them. If you're going through it right now and you want to talk to somebody, definitely go to my website at johnsgriffin.com or life20.app and you can sign up for coaching. All the coaching setup is through Zoom, it's one-on-one, it's private, so it'll just be the two of us talking and we can spend some time sorting through whatever it is you're working through. I've talked to hundreds of guys over the last couple years and I think I've been able to help a lot of people. Anyway, till next time, stay healthy, and if you can, stay single.